Was that a cue? I was looking at the record button.
Yes, a point is a cue.
Oh, all right, well, hey, welcome everybody. It's Dunk Cranny Audio, some brother. It's been a while, so deal with it. This is a very unique show because there's three of us this time, and I don't like more than two people on a call, so this will be a lot of fun.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that one of us is creeping the other two out with his mustache.
There is that, yes. We have
the stash is here, at least to stay, well, at least for a few more days.
Well, that was Kevin and Chris, and we're here to talk wrestling. So if you don't like wrestling, turn off the show, I guess. I don't know what to tell you after that. So
yeah, it's titled Stunt Granny Audio. You should know the wrestling's coming.
You would think, yes. But, well, I think the last time I did a Stunt Granny Audio was with Shahid, and we ended up talking about race most of the time. So,
yeah.
Well, we're not going to be doing that here.
But no, we can talk about race now. All the good guys are on one podcast. The criminal elements on the other one. So, yeah. But I don't know. Where do you guys want to start with? We got actually it's a loaded weekend going through yesterday and even today. We got TakeOver, SummerSlam, Raw, and the Tough Enough final. / SmackDown tapings, which we don't know the results of, so it doesn't really matter. But
yeah, we're not really going to get to the Tough Enough stuff today. We're hopefully slated for just a Tough Enough thing tomorrow. I have not watched one cent of it.
Like I told you, I watched an episode, and then I watched half. I watched half of the first one, then I watched one a few weeks ago, and I kept asking you, why does everyone hate ZZ? And I still don't know why, but screw them. I don't care. None of these people are going to make it anyways, which I guess I don't mean to blow up your spot for tomorrow, but sorry.
I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about, especially after Kevin sees that Amanda versus Alicia Fox classic that was going on before we started.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, Chris. All right, look. If you're going to have a Tough Enough finale where they're going to be in the ring with pros, and if you didn't read what I wrote today about the Diva stuff, why would you have her go against Alicia Fox?
I don't know.
Anybody else?
I think Natalia's doing nothing. Yeah, and she lives in Orlando and she's doing nothing. I don't know. Or Tampa or somewhere close enough.
Yeah. Well, anyways. Yeah. The hell with Tough Enough. It's honestly, whatever happened to the guy that won last time?
Exactly.
We've discussed this one before. John Morrison is the biggest Tough Enough winner, and that really is not saying a whole lot.
Yeah, he won the season 3, the last one on MTV. After an entire season where he wasn't being featured at all, because the story was all about, the Matt Capitelli who getting beat up by Bob Holly.
Which apparently wasn't true anyways, but whatever.
Right.
Okay, so, like I said, big weekend. I don't know, there's so much, I don't feel like being on this thing until 1 in the morning, so let's talk about the big thing, the big news, if you want, was we'll start with the Undertaker, Brock Lesnar angle. We'll start at SummerSlam, go through. I don't know who wants to start, but...
Well, Chris did bring up a point to me earlier on IM that he has an acceptable version of this story that doesn't make me want to choke him out.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's start with this. Well, let's just assume everyone out there, everyone who's listening to this podcast, after every other podcast has covered SummerSlam, knows exactly what happened. We don't need to get into details. People aren't here for our review of matches and our star ratings or anything of that sort. So, the finish, my defense of the finish, I feel that while there was things like wrong with how the execution, the idea, I'm with the idea of it. And just as long as over the next 7 months, we just tell the story. The story is told that, throughout the story, it's why did Undertaker resort to the low brawl? Why would he accept a win like that? Does he not believe that he can beat Brock Lesnar clean in the middle of the ring? To me, that is where that match finish can make sense, and that's where it can be the right finish. Also, I will also say that if they had gone with Lesnar winning, two matches in a row and then going into a third match, I think it would be pretty obvious that Undertaker was going to win at WrestleMania. Now, with this scenario, it cast doubt on the result of the WrestleMania match. So I think in that regard, it's more in line with the right thing to do than I think a lot of people. Now go ahead and dismantle my opinion.
I definitely see the merits of this opinion. But I don't know if the WWE is going to question the manhood of the guy who was the manhood of the locker room for so long.
Right.
But, I guess we can let it play out.
That's a long-ass time to play out, though.
Right? Yeah.
And the fact that Paul Heyman brought up, and Kevin, you and I actually dug through this, that literally Taker had never beaten Brock Lesnar.
Right.
That should have been a huge focus of it. It was a throwaway line. And, I think Michael Cole said something last night, or maybe even at SummerSlam.
They've certainly focused on it more now that Undertaker has the win.
Yeah.
So they're going to need to have that story to have some legs.
What I was getting at, though, was if Lesnar beats him and just beats him again, that Taker doesn't really lose anything, but they can also play up the fact that, he's never won. And yeah, it does make WrestleMania kind of predictable if that's the route they were going. But remember our WrestleMania 30 match prediction for Brock Lesnar and Undertaker? I think it was a 5-minute talking about it and then 10 minutes of talking about how bad the build was, and we both said there's no chance in hell Brock Lesnar wins. So,
yeah. Well, see, I still get a little mad every time Paul Heyman says everyone was shocked and disappointed when The Undertaker lost. I, indeed, was out of my seat cheering.
We witnessed
that.
After the shock wore off, actually, what was it? It was the 21-1 popped up. And that's when the cheering really got. But no, and that's why, if you're going to have Taker win, then have him win. And then they can do the rubber match where you're like, well, anybody can win this. But it almost just seemed like the redemption story of, if this is what they're planning, that the redemption story would have been stronger where over 20 years, or I don't know, not 20 years, but whenever Lesnar first came back, beats Taker, beats him again, and Taker's like, one last ditch effort, I'll put my career on the line. And we've seen, retirement matches actually hold up. I mean, in WWE at least, Ric Flair and TNA doesn't count. But,
no, not even a little bit.
So it would have added to the drama a little bit. Not saying that they can't anyways, but...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that end, too. The clean win by Taker would have been, or maybe not even a clean win, but just nothing that, it just puts him in such a negative light. And
he could have done it without the bell ringing. The whole thing with the referee. Brock could have, just lit up on the Kimura and started complaining to the referee about looking at his shoulders while the tapping was going on and not had, the fiasco with the bell. I think that the execution is a huge part of what went wrong on Sunday.
I think that's actually legit right there. Take away the bell, and I don't think it's all that bad. Because you could have had Heyman outside screaming, he tapped, and Lesnar saying the same thing.
And then while the referee's arguing with Heyman, that's when Undertaker goes low.
Yeah. Has a timekeeper ever rang the bell when it won? It wasn't a heel wrestler as the timekeeper, or two, it turned out the timekeeper was paid off by somebody. That was the other awkward thing.
I couldn't think of one. That thought crossed my mind as soon as it happened.
Yeah, it's like the scene in Naked Gun when the umpires are arguing, and then look, even the guy on the scoreboard thinks he was out. Why does the guy on the scoreboard didn't get to make this decision? Why does this 19-year-old kid get to decide this game?
Oh, Jesus, that derailed me. I wouldn't expect that one. I was thinking about Naked Gun, and I was like, oh, that's such a good... Oh, wait, never mind. It's got that killer in the movie. I can't watch it now without thinking. Okay, so after that match is over, I did like the fact Paul Heyman got on the microphone because the crowd was not pleased. They just went... It was stunned silence. Like, what the hell did we just see? After a pretty damn good show...
Well, and that's the other thing that at least people are smart enough to bring it up, but at least that I've seen. It was a really good match up until that point. It was just awesome match.
That was two grown-ass big men dropping bombs on each other. First off, Brock Lesnar's selling that good, and Taker must have popped him under the eye.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was immediately, like, shaking his head, like, Jesus, just got punched in the face. I will always enjoy that, so.
Yeah, and of course, the epic moment of the dual sit-up and Undertaker's mock laughing, which was one of the all-time great moments. the new great GIF of all time.
It was so nerdy. It just seemed like the old man, like, trying to be funny or trying to be cool, but it worked. For some reason, it worked, and it made me laugh. It made me pay attention.
Was the callback to SummerSlam last year when Lesnar didn't sit up and see the match and did the callous cackle?
Yeah. Well, he did it at WrestleMania to Roman Reigns as well.
Yeah,
that's his hulking up, I guess.
That's a lot better than hulking up.
It goes through to Monday night, and immediately I thought it was a great way to start the show. Get that out of the way now. Get Heyman out there. And when he said he could fill 3 hours, I really, really wanted to see that. Even if it was just a backstage video of somebody coming out, not backstage, but leading to a backstage thing where someone comes out and gets him, and then he just rants for 3 hours, and they put it on like a WWE exclusive.
Yeah, the crowd reacted huge to that. And he did. The story does, you know, allow for Heyman to have just hours worth of grievances about how that went down, and he played that everything up huge. I'm not sure about, you know, saying that he has, they have sympathy for the referee and the timekeeper, but it did, you know, it does put all the heat on the Undertaker in that way, because it's just, you know, they're not angry about stupid stuff. They're angry about at the desperate act of a desperate man who knows he cannot beat Brock Lesnar, and that's what they end the story. I hope that they're going towards.
Oh, real quick, what does GFY mean?
Go fuck yourself.
So it doesn't stand for good for you?
No,
I didn't
think so either.
Not good for you.
Did you hear that? She ignored me. Elise turns to me and she goes, oh, so we say good for you, huh? And I just looked at her and I'm like, no! You of all people should have known that one. But, so anyways... I just want to make sure that, you know what, it was possible it was me, but was there anybody better other than possibly Heath Slater to come out and take the heat away, like Bo Dallas did?
No, there was probably no one better. It was very, very, very well done. You knew that this man was going out to everyone in the world knew that he was headed to slaughter except him, and that kind of a... of an idiot heel character is, you know, at the bottom of the card, it is needed. Especially since, I don't know what the hell happened to Heath.
he shows up in backstage bits here and there, but after that, nothing. Ever since that whole the WrestleMania 28,
yeah, something about. Yeah.
And something about being in Atlanta and the housekeeping, whatever else. Like, yeah, they're going to look down on that, even if you are found innocent or charges dropped, whatever it was. But,
right.
But yeah, that, I don't know. As soon as that music hit, it was, it might as well have been Mark Henry's music. Just when it comes out, somebody's going to get their ass kicked. And just Bo coming down all confident. I think that would have been better. But...
Mark Henry learned his lesson last year when he kept trying to get
Mark Henry's learned his lesson by getting his ass handed by Rusev lately. To no fanfare.
Oh, nope, none needed anymore.
Wow.
There should be fanfare to it, but there just is not.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm actually trying to guide this, so...
What?
Because I would because you're spot on. Mark Henry, fuck it. Mark Henry losing should be a big deal. He's called the world's strongest man for a reason. Getting beaten every week should be like a hey, what the hell's going on with this guy sort of thing. But
right, whatever. Yeah, it absolutely should be. But they decided a while back that they're done with him. The Hall of Pain is closed. So
yeah, yeah. But after that, I mean. Raw, it's like started Saturday with NXT. Good show, two really good matches. Even the tag team match was good. Momentum carried over through SummerSlam, and the momentum carried straight through into New Day.
Oh,
which
they are on top of their game right now. Everything they're doing is gold. The instruments, the singing. All of it is just perfect.
I hit up Shahid yesterday, but he had already mentioned this too. But they've in 3-4 weeks' time have turned into the modern day Edge and Christian.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's impossible to boo the guys, even when they start, and they're doing a bunch of stuff. I have no clue what they're talking about, calling Brooklyn Booty or something. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but it got the crowd mad at them. And then the crowd was like, it's okay, and just start cheering for him again.
Yeah. I mean, the New Day Rocks chants are taking over at this point. The announcers are having to just pretend that the majority of people are chanting New Day sucks. They are ready to just blow this whole thing up.
Did you guys notice that they stopped doing the hey, we want some New Day?
I was dumbfounded
that one got through.
that someone finally realized what they were doing there.
Well, I guess with the whole, what was this, submission sorority name?
Oh.
I guess, you know, if they're like going to be a little bit more careful. But, I just don't get, can either of you guys even pinpoint when New Day became great? Like, it almost seemed overnight that one day they just came out and like, hey, this is great. This isn't the same hack bullshit that when it started.
Well, the heel turn started, I think, around Extreme Rules. Then they really started hitting, they actually started coming into their own after they lost to the primetime players, and then they just added all the, they just started hamming it up completely. Anything that was just, they've limited a lot of the stuff that was absolutely, you know, borderline, you know, racist or, you know, it's not even a racial thing anymore, other than that they use, you know, popular, you know, slang and lingo. Other than that, you know, it's just a fun act at this point. I don't think anyone can be offended about in any way. They're just this kind of goofball act that two of the members can go. So, you know, it's not like the matches are good. The matches are very good, actually.
What say you, Kevin?
Well, I was wondering if you're going to have a beef with Kofi Kingston finally being in the highlights of any group.
It's very awkward, man. It's so many years. I'm not saying his in-ring work is any better, but his character work is way better.
Oh, since he added the skip and the clap and the grin, oh my goodness, that...
Well, it was even, you know, you get so transfixed on Big E celebrating with his giant pecs. I mean, the guy's just... He's not even... He almost looks disproportional to what a regular human being should be. That's how big he is. He's like a cartoon character, basically.
Yeah.
And his eyes bug out, and he has the preacher, deep preacher voice going. But then when they're doing the shimmy and all that, you fix on him because he's always in the middle. Xavier Woods, unfortunately, after the win at SummerSlam, had to hold the belts. He couldn't do too much. That you totally take your eyes off of Kofi, who's hamming it up just as much as Big E. Especially after the win, him flopping around like a dead fish on the ground.
Yeah, that was what immediately got me. His fish flop after the victory, I was just in tears.
Yeah, that was so great.
Well, then he even starts dancing. I don't even know the name of the dance movie he was doing, or whatever it was, but I'm pretty sure I was doing it at my wedding. I mean, not that I remember most of it, but... It was fantastic. And then they follow that up with, one, they've gotten away from the skipping down the ring thing, which is unfortunate. But as long as they keep winning, we will still have the celebratory dances afterwards.
Right.
So it's kind of a push.
Yeah. The skipping down to the ring just didn't work with them doing promos down in the ring. So yeah. That had to go. Because now with the promos down in the ring, they've added instruments and singing. I mean,
I'm trying to figure out if the trombone's sticking around. If not, it's got to be the single greatest musical cameo. Because, like, you know, Edge and Christian had a kazoo. They used it for a while. But I can't remember which one of the Lucha Dragons it was that got pinned. Whoever was getting pinned, and all of a sudden you hear taps playing before the referee can even start counting three. It's just genius. I'm sorry. I don't know. I want to give those three credit for everything. After listening to them on Jericho's podcast, where they kind of towed a company line, but at the same time, they said most of this is their ideas. You know, they kind of went with the characters and made it their own. So I'm just figuring one of them said, "All right, if I got the trombone, we'll win, and I'll someone teach me how to play taps." Just something. I lost my shit when he started doing that. Like that. It's such, one. It's a dick move. Two. It's hilarious.
Someone's losing. That is so brilliant. I also believe that so much of this is theirs. Cause I don't know if there's anyone there who would be that hip to any of this stuff that they're doing. So I do think that they are just. Giving carte blanche to do whatever they want, essentially, to add to this game.
Yeah, but they keep trying to make them heels. And
well, but that's what's made them good, though. Like, they've got to at least have that kind of an attitude, and they've just got to let them get cheered. Like, they try too often to take these cool heels and turn them into good baby faces, and it just fails. Ziggler is definitely an example.
We'll get into that.
No, we're not going to get into that.
Oh, good. Okay. He's
up on that one. I'm off that bandwagon so far that I don't even know if I'm coming through. I'm talking so low just because of how annoyed I am with that.
But, well, no, there are any other number of people aside from him, because I did kind of have a few other people in mind.
Randy Orton was a big one.
Yeah, Randy Orton has definitely, pretty much every time that they've turned him back babyface, he's lost the edge that made him entertaining.
Mm-hmm. They had him smiling once. I remember when he turned face, he started smiling.
Well, or even this past week. Wasn't he hugging the other guys after they won the match?
Yeah, he was. Oh, man. That is awkward. Anytime Orton celebrates or tries to be happy or friendly with anyone. It just doesn't work.
I know what you meant, but when you say every time he tries to be happy and then end it with it doesn't work, it's like, oh my god. That is a bleak outlook. But no, yeah. It's just crucial for them to keep him going the same way. People want to cheer, let them cheer.
Right.
Because they've got the primetime players who people, they like Titus O'Neil enough. Darren Young needs to start doing something again. He's trying to be serious for some reason, which I don't understand.
Well, he's serious, but he's also supposed to be the wacky one. But he doesn't ever pipe up enough. And I just also think that they keep on giving them the wrong mic time. Like, I'm like, why are they on the goddamn headsets again? Like, when they were doing the backstage skits ripping on all the other teams, they were far more entertaining. Like, I don't think Titus O'Neil's bad on the headset, but it kind of limits them as a team.
Yeah. No, you're right. I didn't really care for the backstage stuff. I was like, all right, it's a little goofy. But they always had the millions of dollars, you know, gimmick going. That was always got the crowd going, and it seemed the most natural. And, like, Darren Young is supposed to be Mr. No Days Off, but yet they've made a point of saying that Titus O'Neil is a family man. He won Father of the Year and all this, so it doesn't vibe together. It's like, all right, well, the one partner's always out. I mean, even if they can't do it with the PG, even though it's, you know, a little further than PG now, but they can't say, well, he's always hung over because he's partying up too much or something. But at least give him a reason for him not to talk instead of, well, I'm mad we lost last night. All right, come on, Darren. You gotta do something here.
Right. I mean, they keep putting him on the commentary because there was that one night where Titus just owned JBL. He was on, he was like no one else on the headset, at least in the guest role. But then since then, there was the next time JBL was ready for him and kind of ate him alive. And now since then, they just had nothing to say.
Yeah. Well, I noticed last night, Titus said something to JBL. And JBL shut his mouth for a little bit. And even Cole said something like, well, he got you there, JB, or whatever. And JBL went quiet for a while. And then he said something to Darren Young about not talking.
Well, JBL didn't have a good night either.
When does he?
Oh, my God.
When do any of them?
The Chief J trombone thing that he just did three times before Cole had to shut him down. My goodness.
Do you remember when JBL was actually good on announcing? And that's not even sarcasm.
No, I know. SmackDown 2006-2007. He was tremendous.
Yeah. He comes back and it's like, are they overproducing these guys?
I think that's a very big part of it.
Yeah, and that's what I flat out said. They're being fed lines to say. Because nothing sounds natural. And Byron Saxton, just puppet mouth. Just someone's back there moving the string, so he talks. And that's the only way he knows when to. It's like David Otunga was on the pre-show. Get him out there. Get Byron Saxton out of there and let Otunga, even if he's a talking head like the others, well, he's a better talking head than the others. So,
at least pay him to do something.
But getting back to the tag team stuff, out of the blue, the tag team division is pretty badass because you've got the Dudleys coming back out of the blue. The Lucha Dragons aren't too bad either.
The Dudleys might be the team that'll keep the New Day heel. I think that there's very little chance that people are going to start booing the Dudleys unless the act gets stale, which I guess could happen.
Well,
Kev, go ahead.
I just imagine that this is still going to be something of a shortish or run, or they're going to not make as many appearances as some of the other people. Because I don't think that, Bubba Ray could do it, but D-Von left TNA because of how banged up he was.
I thought he left also because of the money.
That's what I always thought. It was more of a money issue, not as much a banged up issue. But I think that they're certainly in for a run right now. They're gonna face the New Day. I don't think doesn't seem like they're wasting any time with them against the New Day. It's just like that they're gonna go right to that feud. I don't know how long that'll last, and then what they do with them afterward. But we'll see what happens.
Wasn't the rumor that the Dudleys were supposed to be brought in for SummerSlam to take on Rowan and Harper, and that's why they started using the 3D. And then when Roman got hurt, that just got shut down.
But they were also going to do the reunite the Wyatts and have Sting join Ambrose and Reigns as well. So I don't know what that
made no sense. So it was a good thing they didn't do it.
Yeah, that plan never made a whole lot of sense. So Sting's own appearance can probably be shuttled off until later. That place did pretty much come unglued. Like, I didn't realize it had been 10 years since they'd been in the WWE.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Other than Bubba's Rumble cameo. Yeah, it has been 10 years, and they did not leave on, it's always been said a lot, they did not leave on good terms. At least Bubba didn't. Bubba was pretty much an asshole to everyone. So, it was interesting to see them back. I mean, they've got a fresh crew of opponents for themselves. They can, you know, have this run against the New Day. You can turn them heel at some point. You know, but we know Bubba has the chops to have a singles run. Now, I don't know if they know how many people in WWE are even familiar with, you know, the Bully Ray character, but he does have those chops. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the big things that they have going for them is, one, it's been 10 years, so it will seem fresh again. Two, it's been 10 years that they haven't been there, and they've been active. Not a whole lot of people know they've been active, so there's not going to be a lot of ring rust.
Yeah, there should be.
Yeah, but then also, and you brought it up with him doing a singles push, or singles run, that's going to help them exponentially. Because even Devon had sort of a singles run on his own. And yes, they ended up, you know, tagging together again. But, or at least being in the same group. But I think being able to get on your own, learn stuff, and then come back together, your mind's going to be better as a team. It's going to be like, all right, we can do this together instead of this like we used to do to keep the act fresh. And that's what, I mean, that's what last night when that music started, it was shocking because they've done a very good job of keeping stuff under wraps, which we'll get into in a little bit with something else. And they don't look out of place. Like, I don't like nostalgia stuff. I don't like when, like, Jimmy Snuka shows up and he looks horrible and everyone's like, oh, isn't this great? It's like, no, it's sad. He's just putting the costume on. Well, here are two guys that show up, which should be a nostalgia act, but it looks pretty damn good, and they're looking to be in great shape, too. So it's like it's something to look forward to now. And especially with the teams. I mean, Kevin brought up the fact that today when we were talking, the Usos are eventually going to come back. So you've got that nice team together. You got supposedly this new Wyatt group, or the Wyatt family. You can kind of work the Ascension in. I mean, right.
Yeah, I know. They might drop to them.
This should be the first team that the Dudleys beat on SmackDown. That they were advertised to return to SmackDown. Just 3D them and put that to bed. I'm not an Ascension fan at all. I have no desire to see them.
Was anybody an Ascension fan? It seemed like their call-up was just one of those, well, we got to give these guys a try eventually. Because I don't even think the NXT, like, the Full Sail even liked them that much.
No, that Full Sail crowd's the easiest crowd in the world, and you could hear Chip, you know, you could hear crickets chirping when the Ascension was tag team champions for a year.
But, no, so it, I don't know, man. It's going to be fun. But it's going to be kind of like the Divas thing where they're going to have to, I'm afraid the tag team division is going to center around New Day and the Dudleys right now. They made a point of including primetime players in it at the end, which I thought was pretty good. So you can throw them in, but like, it, as they push the women, it almost, it, there stands the chance that the tag team division can become the old pushed Divas division, where they're going to have 3-minute tag team matches, and no one's going to be able to talk. They just throw them out there.
Well, there shouldn't be that problem because of the just still staggering amount of television that the WWE produces. But they are so in love with video packages that they don't show that kind of stuff. I mean, SmackDown is one of those shows that I get through that in an hour and 15 minutes tops. Because so much of it is raw recap or recap of what happened earlier on the show. And, you know, it's easy to buzz through that thing. And, I mean, if you threw in another tag team match in there and one last video package, you could get it done.
Yeah, but then no one's going to know what's going on. You know, I mean, that dumbass reasoning why there are so many, like, recaps or whatever else. I mean, when they recap what happened right after you come back from commercial, I understand it's like, well, for the people tuning in, no one tunes into a TV program at 8:45 or 8:37 or 9:26. No, quit rehashing shit. Just let it go. And if people can't figure it out, because, you know, they may have a DVR as well, so you can rewind. I mean, it's not... It's a production thing, which, you know, their production... And I know they produce a lot of TV, like you said. It hasn't been that great lately, especially direction-wise, but anyways.
Yeah, good in-ring work covers up a magnitude of sins.
Well, as long as they're showing it. I mean, one of the most heinous things last night, and I don't think she understood what I was talking about, and this is the John Cena-John Stewart thing. Stewart's in the ring, makes his case. This is why I didn't want it to happen. Ric Flair comes back. I don't remember the last time he was on Raw. It's been a while. We'll just go with that.
Yeah.
So instead of showing the grand entrance of Ric Flair returning to Raw as a surprise, sauntering out, doing the Ric Flair stuff, they kept cutting back and forth between Ric Flair walking, oh, there's Jon Stewart yelling woo in the mic. Back to Ric Flair. Wait a minute, he's like 20 feet further. Back to Jon Stewart. Ric Flair's in the ring? Wait, what happened to the entrance of Ric Flair? Not Heath Slater, Ric Flair. They keep the goddamn camera on Ric Flair. And then you can show Jon Stewart. We can hear him. It's fine. We know what's going on. None of us think that Jon Stewart's the one yelling woo, or that Ric Flair's the one sounding like that when he says woo. And they kept cutting the crowd shots. They missed Stephen Amell's kip up at SummerSlam. Just all these little things that have been plaguing them for over a year now. But
yeah, I was trying to think. I felt like there was another moment. It was either during that promo or another. Maybe it was right before Cena grabbed him or something. Like, I felt like there was kind of a big moment that they skipped over earlier today or yesterday. And I can't really recall what it was.
It's become too many to remember. And that's part of the... It's just, you know, it's... You know, you always want specifics. That's why I gave some. But then there are others where it's like... The whole thing was just bad. What parts? I could name more of the good than I could... You know, it's that much... Like, the good stood out because there was so much bad. One of those sort of things. But... No, I don't know. The tag team thing, with all those hours of TV and the network now as well, they stand a chance. And it's kind of weird. They don't usually hit a very huge stride at SummerSlam. So I'm hoping next week isn't like a colossal downturn.
Well, I think this is kind of one of those things that it's a continued evolution of SummerSlam as... I mean, if you didn't think it was the number two show in the WWE arsenal, I would say with the main event that they had, and really the co-main event that they had, that, I mean, it's the number two show. And then the other thing that always happens after WrestleMania is you get a bunch of debuts, And we this one we got the debut of the Dudleys, so to speak. And then we got Sting coming back after a several month absence. So, yeah, I mean, big returns are certainly one of those things that are happening the Raw after SummerSlam. So, I mean, yeah it's really the number two show now. And if there's any disputing that, I mean, I don't know. I guess to me it's still bigger than the Rumble, because the Rumble's ultimate point is to get to WrestleMania. So, I mean, it really has a little bit of luster taken off of itself, because it's the start to the road to WrestleMania. SummerSlam is kind of the end of feuds now. Survivor Series is just going to get blown through like normal, with some type of one Survivor Series traditional match probably tossed in there.
Last fall was just one of the worst periods in WWE history. It was so awful. I hope we're not in line for another period like that.
And last fall was also one of the reasons that we didn't go to WrestleMania. Well, no, I got married last year. That's why I didn't go to WrestleMania.
I did.
Yeah, two out of three of us didn't go. But,
it figures. It was a good show, too.
Live.
Well, speaking of Sting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bow out of this because, you know, it was cool to see Sting there, okay? It was a cool surprise. I didn't know who to expect. I mean, I guess maybe John Cena. But, you know, everybody should have known that somebody else was going to be there, or something else was going to be there.
Yeah.
So when it was Sting, cool. He must have been hot as hell in there, or he was perpetually slicking down his hair.
Yeah,
the entire top portion of his makeup's gone. Triple H acts scared of Sting because, you know, he didn't take care of him at WrestleMania. And then they go off the air. And I'm going to bow out because I don't like Sting. This is a dumb angle, and it makes no sense. So I'll let you guys hash it out.
Well, I mean, they have been going with the statue when Seth Rollins is bigger than everything. Sting's not going to win the belt.
He's not. And
that's pure insanity. So, I mean, this is really just going to be another bragging point for Seth Rollins.
Yeah. If there's any guy, if there's anyone on that roster who can get a good singles match out of Sting without a lot of gaga, I think it's Rollins. I think that Rollins right now is probably the best guy they have right now. So, you know, if you're going to do this, might as well have Sting going for the title one time in his career, the WWE title one time in his career against the best young guy in the business who can carry him, and just get this and just kind of get through this. I mean, they held Sting off of SummerSlam because they needed something for a month later. They either could have put him in the whole thing with the Shield and the Shield guys and the Wyatts, but you know, they thought that this was a better idea. Now, obviously, this goes to, you know, the lack of long term planning, because if they had known what they were doing in September, in March, maybe Sting would have won the match against Triple H, but he didn't, and this is where we're at now.
And that was one of those funny things that I remembered reading this. It reminds me of our friend Dan Keister complaining about James Caldwell asserting that Jushin Liger should have lost to Tyler Breeze on the NXT event. Vince loves to screw with people who have not made their career in the WWE. Like, I was really surprised that Liger was an exception.
Yeah, I was very surprised about that. To a degree, I was surprised about that. But also, Breeze isn't a, you know, protected animal even in NXT. So I don't you know what kind of politics there are involving New Japan and Liger. I'm not sure if they said that, you know, he can't lose. I don't think you know, WWE's gonna, you know, bow down to New Japan, but at the same time, I guess the result of that match didn't matter because nothing was on the line. In this sense, Sting is not gonna win the WWE Championship, you know?
Right. So. That is true. Okie dokie. Well, are you going to tap back in and move us in another direction, Mace? Because, I mean, that really is... I mean, there isn't much to that story, honestly. Like, it was a very cool reveal. I don't know why I was thinking... I guess I was just thinking it was going to be Cena. So, I didn't really think much of the situation.
Well, Cena's got the... his, you know, guaranteed rematch for the U.S. title in his back pocket, and the next pay-per-view is Night of Champions, so the gimmick is going to be, I'm sure, is going to be that Rollins has to wrestle twice.
See, here's the problem with this match, though. Like, I can't see Sting winning the title. So, do you have him win some cheap way by disqualification? Because if not, Sting's been in two WWE matches.
You can always have Sting win and then Sheamus come down and bro kick him.
Oh, yeah. That's what WWE needs. That's what WWE needs this fall. Sheamus, WWE champion. They've got to be having buyer's regret about putting Sheamus in that position.
But no, what I was getting at with Sting, though, is he's got to win somehow. Because if not, he's been in two WWE matches and lost both of them. And that's just a ridiculous failure by WWE, and really, outside of getting paid, by Sting's part, to come in and lose both, I mean, be winless in your debut match, but then also in, like, your return match as well. So it's just an awkward position to put Sting and Creative. Because Creative can only book, like, 90 minutes of a show. That was pretty clear yesterday. So it's very strange to me what they're going to do here. And if there's no intrigue, it's not a dream matchup, which is what Sting should be doing. You know, to a lesser extent, Sting and Triple H was a dream matchup for some people. People wanted to see that. Sting and Brock Lesnar would be one. Obviously, Sting and Undertaker. Not Sting and Seth Rollins. It doesn't exactly roll off the tongue when you go, who do you want to see Sting face? Well, Seth Rollins. What? What are you talking about? What about The Rock or Steve Austin or something like that? Not that him and Austin haven't probably tangled a long time ago, but you guys get what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. And, yeah, I don't know. You can't really solve that part of the problem, I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's set into motion, so I mean, that's kind of out of the question, I guess.
Yeah.
Is maybe the better way to put it.
Yeah. Well, since we've brought him up, John Cena had a pretty rough 2 days. SummerSlam match was good. He needs to stop with the springboard stunner, whatever.
Oh, that is one of the worst moves in the business.
He never connects with it. Never.
I think there was once.
Jumps down.
I think there was one time that he connected, just because he didn't have any distance to do it in.
I think the first time he did it was WrestleMania against Rusev, but I remember it actually looking good there. But from there, it's getting worse. I don't know how it's getting worse, but it is.
I hate saying stuff like this because there's nothing to back it up, but it's as if nobody backstage has the nerve to go up to him and go, dude, you gotta stop that. Like the crossface, or the STF, excuse me, when Austin flat out told him, dude, sink it in for me. Make it look better. And all of a sudden, he starts sinking it in. Now he's gotten away from it again. But someone just needs to tell him, dude, that looks like garbage every time. Stop doing it.
Well, Austin tried on that on the podcast with Heyman, but
I thought the Jon Stewart thing was fun, even though he totally blew it and, you know, made it clear he was going to hit John Cena.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest problem that I had with that. I'm just like, dude, you're looking at John Cena already.
Yeah, I noticed that. I didn't think
of all the, and I mean, I think. part of it is surprise just because Stewart has shown an aptitude to write his own material for wrestling and perform well, and that just seems like one of those rookie mistakes that, you know, he seems to have an understanding of the psychology of the situation.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a weird misstep on top of that.
Yeah. But then on Monday, we get Bully Cena, which is the worst John Cena to get. They just got done talking about him granting 500 wishes, which I know they're totally inappropriate, but damn, there were some funny dead kid jokes going around, man. I mean, I think I'm not giving credit to anybody just in case they don't want anyone knowing, but someone said whenever a kid sees John Cena, they just stare at their parents, like, just like, are you kidding? I'm dying? Like, just that sort of thing. Another one was, when's John, like, just the basic one, too. Like, when's John Cena gonna just walk in with a sickle? Like, alright, come with me. Just all sorts of shit like that. And this is what I wrote in the Tuesday morning thing. It wasn't the jokes, necessarily. It was the amount of them and how fast they came in. Because I know I turned to Elise and I was like, you know, John Cena's seen a lot of dead kids. That's awful.
Well, they weren't dead at the time.
That still's got to weigh on you. I understand you're doing something nice for a kid. But knowing, like, that whole Connor, I'm sorry, I don't remember his last name. Like, that stuff with Daniel Bryan, like, that kid came out, they do all that stuff for him, and he dies. It's like, not that you think the kid's going to be cured or anything, but it's like, wow, you had a great time, this kid really looked up to you and all this, and it didn't matter. Like, that's a very, not life, what's the opposite of life affirming? That's exactly what that is.
Well, it's not that. The part that matters is, you know, the kid's last days are happy. That's what matters.
Yes, I'm having a freeway.
I like how you just came about and proved you helped prove the jokes. So, well, the last days are shit. I fell into that one. Yep. But so they make John Cena out to be this great guy. He comes out, he's mad, and then he beats up a 50-year-old guy that weighs, I think, 70 McMahon said 100 pounds less than him. I'm like 150, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that it was only 100 myself.
What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I was a little surprised it was only 100 myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it has to be more.
It's just, here's the stand-up guy, you're making John Cena out to be so great, whatever else. Then he acts like a dick and just walks away. And it's like, no, what he should have done was like, you know, well, I understand what you were doing. I don't agree with it. And it's like, but, you know, I could really mess you up because this isn't your world. Even threatening him, not in like a menacing way, but just even laying it out like, I got to walk away from you right now. Or just something like that. Instead, he picks up an attitude adjustment. And no one in the crowd really seemed to care for that. Like, it wasn't even booing. It was just kind of like, really? Again? But the bully John Cena is not good. Unless he's going full heel, which we all know is not happening. So, this doesn't make sense then. But,
I mean, I guess I didn't break down that whole segment, you know, meta-wise. I just thought, I guess I just put that part of my brain off and just enjoyed the amazing world we live in where John Cena, Ric Flair, and John Stewart are sharing a ring together and John Stewart is taking a wrestler's finisher.
Oh, no, the visual's fun. The idea of it's, I mean, the idea, you probably got to laugh. I was like, cool, let's everyone do that. But it's like, Hulk Hogan didn't beat up, and John Cena's the closest Hulk Hogan we got. He's not Steve Austin, you know? So it's like, Hulk Hogan didn't beat up, you know,
Bob
the
Uecker.
Manager got beat up because they deserved it. They interfered or something. But like a celebrity, I don't really remember that too often. mostly Roddy Piper smashing stuff over Lyle Bano's head, which was great.
Right.
But, so they conveniently got Cena out of the building. It was cool. And it was a good run. I mean, Cena matches are good, regardless of who he's in there with now. So he's got that, but he's, I don't think he's ever really found that happy place with his character, even regardless of how it's like, you know, they pay to boo, pay to cheers. Okay. But, unless yeah, it was just kind of descriptive of it.
Well, and there are plenty of guys who are just cheered. Although, I just feel like the split crowd is here to stay in general.
Yeah. It's at this point, it's part of the fun of going to a WWE event. Some of the same voices are chanting, "Let's go Cena," and Cena sucks. It's part of the atmosphere. I don't think that many people have any kind of a visceral hatred of John Cena anymore, especially in an audience like they had these last two nights. That is total, hipster ironic type stuff. With the taboo Cena at an event like that.
Yeah. It also, as I don't know about you, Chris, if you've seen it, but Kevin and I have seen it firsthand. People wearing John Cena gear, booing John Cena, and chanting "Cena sucks."
Yeah, I believe I saw some people like that at WrestleMania. Yes, that's what the faux Cena hate crowd is going to be at its strongest. At a WrestleMania with all those people, and then either Northeast or those UK crowds. I don't want to talk about those crowds.
We're almost at an hour, but it doesn't matter.
No, because I'm trying to think of what the other. I was trying to think without looking at anything what the other big angles were, because we got Dudleys, we got Sting, we got Cena.
Don't forget the Wyatt family has a new member.
Yeah, Braun Strowman, who looks like every 80s monster heel Hulk Hogan ever slayed. We'll see what he has. I don't know if this is gonna how well this is gonna play.
You know what? If it bombs miserably in 3 months, so be it. That debut was awesome.
Yeah, I do think.
No one knew who the hell he was, which is a first. Because I don't know if you guys were online last night, but everyone was going, "Who's this guy? Who the hell is this? Where's he come from?"
Yeah,
and he's been in WWE since 2013.
Yeah, they just kept him off that NXT TV. He's only worked the house shows and in the performance center. He's never been an NXT TV presence. So no one has seen him. No one knows what he has.
Well, I read somewhere that he was apparently a part of Adam Rose's entourage.
Oh, yeah, I did read that.
The Silly Giant or something.
Yeah, maybe they had him dressed up like a pizza or something. I don't even know.
That's
something green giant.
Yeah, but I think what got lost is Roman Reigns, and I mentioned this last night, he's kind of fallen back in the pack, which is okay. And now it's time, and now they can work on doing whatever they want with him. But Roman Reigns, he handled, I mean, and I understand, they're all working together. But he legit handled Roman Reigns like he weighed nothing. That was pretty incredible to see.
Yeah, I believe they got this guy from the strongman world. So yeah, he's just incredibly, powerful guy. So yeah, I mean, if for a run, if you can get him, I don't know if the end game is, with the Wyatts and Reigns and Ambrose. Obviously, Reigns and Ambrose need a third guy. Yeah. Where they're going to find that person from, I don't know. Maybe they'll get someone brand spanking new as well.
I saw someone put a meme up saying, having like Samoa Joe saying, "Hey, Shield, if you need help, give me a call or something." And I'm like, that's not going to happen. I can't see that happening.
No.
The other rumor,
Samoa Joe would look good in black. Back,
he'd be the third.
I guess you could do that, but
I don't see what's wrong with having four of them. The guy had a black sheet mask. Get the guy with the white sheet mask. There, they got something in common.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think let's make the why it's the big heel group. Let's make them a threat.
Yeah, have them win. Well,
and that's been the problem. Like, as much as they've at least made him sound like a threat in word, or at least through his promos, it just never seems like he's been able to back it up. And it really didn't help that they lost the match at SummerSlam fairly decisively. Like, I mean, that did not help my image of him at all. Like, again, like, I know that I look back on it and go, oh, I guess he did win this feud and that feud, but he didn't really win this war, and the only reason he's winning it now is he's outnumbering the other team.
Yeah. Well, he won that, the Dean Ambrose feud.
Right.
The problem with that was it took place a lot on SmackDown and Raw. So it's like, does that really count?
Yeah, and so much of that happened during the holiday run of one of the shows when a lot of people weren't watching.
Yeah.
They wrestled like, they had like three or five, they had like five TV matches in the month of December alone that just completely erased from my memory. They all just blend together.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why, you know, you always hear, like, he didn't win the John Cena feud, which, who does? Roman Reigns was getting the best of him, but didn't he beat Roman Reigns at the pay-per-view, because
he beat Roman Reigns at Battleground.
Yeah, well, Luke Harper had to interfere, so it's just one of those things. But yeah, it's definite time for him to back it up. It's time for creative to allow it. I mean, it just seems, because remember how hot Wyatt was going into WrestleMania 30? That people were just openly cheering him. They did the Fireflies thing with the cell phones, like impromptu. That wasn't WWE planned. That sort of stuff. So it just seems like now they've just pulled him back. And, you know, just keeping him on that cusp, kind of like Roman Reigns is now. They're on that cusp.
Yeah, and I don't understand why they're there. Like, the WWE needs as much help as they can get. Especially in the upper echelons there.
So this should hopefully this is the start of something pretty big here. They've got, you know, Harper can work, Bray can work some, but Bray and Bray also can do the talking. They've got this monster. They can kind of make a centerpiece if they want going back into play. They can be this monster heel group that just lays waste to everyone. And I think that this, and then we got this Braun Strowman guy, I think that there might be a limited shelf life to it, but there's enough to get through, you know, Ambrose and Reigns and probably get him to Cena, even if it's just once.
Yeah, they love having Cena take on power guys, so I would not be completely shocked by that happening.
Yeah. I don't know, I like, it always seems like everyone tops out at three people now. I think four would be fun, even if they turn him into like a Big Dick Dudley or a 911 type figure. And just have Strowman stand outside, or Strowman.
Yeah.
Is it Strowman or Strowman?
Strowman.
Yeah, that's probably, he's going to be protected very, very, very much as an outside enforcer, as the third guy in six-man tags. It'll probably be a while before they'll throw him out in a one-on-one match on a major show. I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah. I think one thing that needs to be said is the announcers, for somehow, actually called it correctly when they were all three were standing in the ring, and it was an awkward camera angle, but you saw the size difference because Harper was standing next to him, and Harper looked like a normal person. And then Bray kind of stepped in the shot. He's shorter, but he's wide, too. Even he looked small compared to that guy. That's impressive. Because, Kevin, you actually met him, right? Luke Harper.
Yeah, because I met him like at a Prime Wrestling event.
No, what is he? He's probably more than 6'6", right?
He's like 6'10".
Okay.
Because him and Nash faced off, and he wasn't giving up. Really, if he was given, he might be 6'9" or something like that. He is a very large gentleman. He is in no way short either. So right, yeah, no. And he was giving up some size. That other guy, I was like, hot damn.
Yeah, And I know that it could be considered camera angle, but he looked like he towered over them and just had the size on him. That was remarkable to me.
I mean, it's been a long time since someone has come in like that kind of a monster. It harkens back to, Hogan throwing punches at Zeus, when Ambrose hit that super kick on him right to the head and felt nothing. It's been so long that we've had that kind of a character. Everything old is new again. It could work. To a degree, it absolutely will.
Yeah, and I'm all for it, and I'm actually all for it as long as Luke Harper keeps doing his flex thing. When he turned to Roman Reigns and just did the guns, and then he did it again to Dean Ambrose on the ground, and then broke into the whole hands of the head thing, that entertained me to no end. It was so weird that he just something out of the blue, and I think Cole even said, "Yeah, he is a strange individual." It's like, well, but it works. It's really working in this case. So, but it's something to hope for with the Wyatts, and yeah, it's going to lead to Ambrose and I almost said Rollins, Roman Reigns needing somebody else. So that could be. That's an angle going forward. But it also runs the risk of burning out real quick, too.
Like, right.
It's just, Really, the other big thing is the other angle, if you want to put it that way. Not so much an angle, but you have the Divas. And they keep talking about this Divas Revolution.
Yeah.
They keep putting on 6 woman tag matches.
9 women, 3 teams.
Well, that was SummerSlam. Right. No, even going back, they've had some singles matches, so I need to, back up a little. But then last night, exactly what got Ronda Rousey and Serena Williams, all these women, their place in history and whatever else is, let's have them sit around and talk and bitch about stuff. That always works.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what people want to see. And not in a way of saying, yeah, I'm going to take her apart, or I'm better than her. I'm going to take her down, take her title. No, it's, okay, let's have dinner. Miz.
Miz puts his hand in the air. Says, when my hand
Jeremy,
goes up,
you got a pinky swear with us.
Oh.
Come on, Maze. Put the pinky up.
Oh, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
That whole thing started from Charlotte having to call the Four Horsemen the greatest faction in WWE history. Paige talks saying about how it's not about individual glory, it's about the team. I'm like, this team crap should have been over after SummerSlam. One of the things I wrote to Kevin about what I wanted to talk about is just the difference in 48 hours in the same building between how the fans treated women's wrestling. You had at NXT TakeOver, a tough New York crowd brought nearly to tears by the end of a women's wrestling match, and then 48 hours later, they don't give a shit about the women in that ring.
Yeah. I actually think that at TakeOver, Bayley and Sasha should have been the main event.
It absolutely should have been.
That was surprisingly emotional.
That was incredibly, as a technical match, I'm not sure. I might have to watch it again to kind of get whether where it ranks up with Sasha Natalia, not Sasha Natalia, Charlotte Natalia, Sasha versus Charlotte, Sasha versus Becky. But for pure emotion and just, it was, I'll call it my favorite match of the year. I really, really, the favorite moment in wrestling on TV all year. I thought it was just really incredible what they accomplished there.
Yeah, and it's
two different worlds.
Well, yeah, and I think you just finished with it. That's kind of the big thing about that situation is it's just so different from what they're presenting in the Divas Revolution. Like, that was about, Bayley winning over Sasha and like just all of her hardship story and never being able to break through.
For the last year, Sasha has been her bully, and you know she overcame her bully, and she won clean in the middle. It was a great match. That you know everything about that match was once again we're out of the star ratings here, but the whole presentation from beginning to end, I'll say 5 stars for what they did with Sasha and Bayley.
Yeah, I mean, I might not go that far just because it did lean on the story a little bit more than the match itself. But the match itself was still very good. So I don't really want to take away from it that journey that you took it on that you went on, but because you're keeping them in teams, like you're not getting any stories like that. No, and then they even had to do the whole Becky Lynch is the one out in space character. Because she just started blurting out random stuff during the interview. And then even after the Bellas came down, it's just like, why is she being presented this way? Like, oh my gosh.
Well, they even made the point of having Alicia Fox make fun of her for it. Which served no purpose whatsoever. It's like, all right, if you're going to have her be the wacky one, have her be the wacky one, but don't have Alicia Fox come out and undercut her. So you're the crazy one of the group, huh?
And don't give her the win the night before, which helps legitimize her. If Charlotte locks in the figure eight yet again, no one would have been surprised. Yeah. And no one really would have had a problem with it because they've been featuring her more than everybody else. So, I mean, it's just weird. You're like, oh, maybe they're going with Becky instead of Charlotte here to start off the singles matches.
Yeah. And right now, they've got no one. They've got no one ready for that role, that person who's going to end this interminable Nikki Bella title reign. I mean, the Team Bella made PCB look like fools.
Yeah.
On Monday. I mean, they were just absolutely just outclassed in every way. They didn't even win them. And somehow, the Bellas turned heel, turned babyface during that segment.
If they turned babyface just because the crowd didn't react.
Well, on a weekly basis, you have no idea what the Bellas are. Which is okay. Right. I mean, got Team Bad, who are supposed to be the bad guys, bad girls, and then you've got...
PCB.
Thank you. I keep wanting to say PBJ, but I'm not even joking. That's why I stopped. Who are obviously the faces. Then you got the Bellas and Alicia Fox just thrown in there for, because, well, why not? As these tweeners that just act any way they want.
Yeah, I mean, it would really help if the Bellas or Alicia Fox were interesting in any way. Like, I mean, even though they've been around and they've been established, like, their characters don't have any of the depth that, again, to go back to the Sasha and Bayley story, that story has some depth, which, you know, makes it worthwhile. It's just like, oh, no, we're the bosses because we've been around here the longest. And that's our only claim, really. There isn't any character to them at all either. So, if there was something to invest in, maybe it would help them as tweeners, but they're tweeners who don't have really any backstory.
Yeah, I mean, I was open to, you know, when this whole thing started with Stephanie McMahon, which was a problem from the beginning, that Stephanie, you know, the principal came in and separated all the children and put them in. Or gym teacher came in and separated all the children and put them into dodgeball groups. But you know, I was willing to give it a chance of, you know, okay, let's see what the longtime WWE divas have to offer. Don't just, you know, get rid of them or, you know, sweep them away. But it's obvious that going kind of half and half with it is not working. You know, half of the old divas philosophy and half of the NXT philosophy, mixing it together is just not working.
Well, the Bellas, Alicia Fox isn't a problem, because if she wasn't on TV after that, no one would notice. And not even trying to be mean about it. It's just that's how nondescript she is. And the Bellas are the big problem right now. If you had just those three and, you know, maybe take out Tamina from this and have her go back to the bodyguard role, you would have a pretty good little division going on there between them all. Yeah. You can rotate in that. But you've got the Bellas who, depending on what you read or who you believe, Nikki Bella's not losing that title because John Cena keeps going to bat for her not to lose it. Which sounds kind of a convenient way of going about things, because, you know, ties into the Total Divas thing, but there's possibly some truth to that. So having no one ready to take the title away from Nikki Bella right now doesn't seem to be a problem, because they're never going to take it away from her.
I'm not sure if I go that far, but they're obviously not taking it for the next 3 weeks. I mean, and of course, Native Champions is 4 weeks away, so she's gonna hit that number. She's gonna, you know, because they have to have their little dig at Punk and AJ don't give a crap about.
Yeah, and I found that funny that didn't they not name AJ Lee when they were talking about the length of the title reign?
Yeah,
they said it was held by someone else.
No, they mentioned AJ Lee last night.
Oh, did they?
Yes, I was actually kind of surprised. But, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is just us yanking ourselves, but it's like, AJ Lee did nothing wrong. She married the guy that quit. She was there working. She took her time off, came back, worked, and then said, all right, I'm just leaving. I'm retiring. All right. I mean, I'm sure there was more to it, but there's nothing on TV on their airwaves, their, you know, hours of programming, that they shouldn't be mentioning her. So, but that's one thing. But going back to TakeOver, like, I don't ever give the star range for these things. The Sasha Banks and Bayley match was good. It had an incredible atmosphere, though, which elevated it. There were a lot of really awkward and dangerous-looking spots.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely one.
That final one, I had no clue what the hell they were doing. And when she does that, to the off the top row, Bayley to belly. Frankensteiner?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Now, as vicious as that looked, that final Bayley to belly suplex, that looked like she was trying to kill her.
Oh, yeah, she was in the moment. She won. Plus, I mean, dating back to Shane Douglas and ECW, the belly to belly suplex. It's a kind of a weak finish that if you're not, you know, remember how Shane would do it. It was like slow motion belly to belly suplex where you just pin the guy down gently. You know, look like crap. So you really do have to have a snap to it to make it look good. But she was obviously full of adrenaline. This is the greatest moment of her life. And she was going to put. And
yeah,
she
I was, mean, and Sasha ragdolled herself. Her.
Oh, Sasha, she takes some huge bumps. I mean, starting with the match with Charlotte last December, like she, on a very, very skinny, you know, woman frame, takes bumps that, oh, she's going to be feeling those 10, 20 years from now, without a doubt.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, and that's what made it, and then having the four of them get in the ring, which I did not realize Becky Lynch is the only one of the four that hadn't won the NXT title.
Yeah, that was kind of the interesting part about her getting called up. It was almost like she was just starting to kind of get over to the NXT audience when she, you know, teamed up and then broke up with and feuded with and had that really, really tremendous, tremendous match with Sasha at the May Takeover. So she was just really starting to get momentum going in NXT when they called her up. But she, I mean, she's experienced. They bring up, you know, she was in Japan when she was 18 years old. So, but it's not like she isn't ready. So, I mean, that was fine. That, you know, she never got the NXT title reign. But.
Yeah, it was just funny to see that. Real quick, I can't remember if it was Chris. You said the Dudley Boys, their first match on SmackDown would be the Ascension.
That is correct. Yeah, I was right, wasn't I? Hey, for months they were doing the. I was surprised that they never brought in the Dudleys back when the Ascension was doing their anti-legendary tag team gimmick.
Yeah, that went nowhere.
yeah, because for whatever reason, I think the Dudleys might have actually been the end game for that, but then they just never got, they couldn't get them in at that point. Bubba was still, you know, kind of dancing around with TNA, trying to get, you know, an easy money schedule deal. Yeah. I don't blame for that.
I just saw that, so I figured I'd mention it. But yeah, but that was infuriating last night. I understand the crowd, you know, the creative did not give the women weren't positioned well, but they were working their ass off in that match. And to just start doing the wave, going into business for themselves bullshit again, that kind of behavior had finally died down because the product has gotten better. So there was no need to do it. And I just turned to Elise and even said, these idiot announcers better not acknowledge them doing this. Like clockwork. JBL, this crowd's live, or this crowd's awesome. And it's like, you fucking idiot. Because you know the next douchebag that's going next week hears that, and you got all his dumb little friends together, and if they can do it, they're just going to do it no matter what. And... you know, then they start chanting JBL. I was like, this crowd's really smart. And they were. Then they start doing like a Byron sort of thing after that. And then they start chanting, we are awesome.
Oh, we are awesome. Oh, I just want to kill. I guess when it does that. Oh, I mean, thankfully they don't go to these, you know, it's a, you know, post-major event that where people travel from thing. It's very much a Northeast thing. You know, hopefully they'll be back. They'll have a run through the Midwest or the South or the Mid South or the South. You know, and things will at least be back to normal there. But yeah, you know, after three nights that the crowds were through NXT and through SummerSlam, they were fine. They actually came up with some funny stuff, actually, you know, chanting Roman sleeping. I thought that at SummerSlam, I thought that was amusing, but yeah. By the time that match got in the ring, they jumped the shark completely.
Well, yeah, I think that sometimes maybe there's just a little crowd fatigue at that point. Because there's probably a lot of people that have been there to multiple shows. And
for sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a little draining.
Yep. You had 4 hours the night before. You got 4 hours on Monday. Was it 3 hours on Saturday? If you went to all
two,
that.
Two and a half hours, yeah.
Well, they recorded the first. They recorded this coming tomorrow night's episode of NXT.
Oh.
Tonight, because this will actually drop on Wednesday afternoon. I'll say tonight's NXT. Yeah, that's the show from. That's also a show from Brooklyn that they recorded before they went on the air.
Yeah, so they were there even longer for Takeover. But well, speaking of long,
yep,
that's our perfect get the hell out of here thing. So I know we didn't cover everything, like Big Show being awesome, but. Being abused by good guys.
No, I almost brought that point up because there is something else in that realm. Oh, just how many good guys are acting like dicks?
Yeah. I understood Owens and all that.
When we were talking about John Cena was when I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because all the good guys kind of acted like dicks on Monday.
Uh-huh. Maybe they were fatigued as well. But... I think it's worth mentioning later, because right now is not the time. So.
No, we have certainly gone long enough.
Yes, so I'm going to check out first, and you guys can fight it out. Everyone, thanks for listening, and I have to do the plug. You can email us, stuntgranny@gmail.com. You can check us out on Twitter, stuntgranny, and then we have our individual ones. I don't use mine very much. Unless I get on these roles, but I haven't been in one lately. And then check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. So I'm out of here. I'm rambling.
Okie doke. Well, my sippy time beer of the evening has been from the fine city of Dayton, Ohio. It is Warp Wings 10-ton oatmeal stout, and it is quite tasty. So, yeah, when I go to the Real Ale Fest in Dayton on Saturday, I will not be having this beer because there is no need to have it at a festival. So that's it for at DeFrango11 and at Stunt Granny. Christopher,
you're the last one up. Signing out.